We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Tim Sigalski. Tim is the Director of Social Media at Marquette University, as well as an adjunct professor of media writing, social media analytics, and an honor seminar on creativity. Tim is the author of the social media guide, Analytics to Action, and does social media consulting and instruction for entrepreneurs and businesses. In his spare time, he does freelance writing, including a weekly blog for Draft magazine about beer and running. He drinks a lot of coffee as well. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
I'm really curious about this beer and running thing. Can we just talk about that a little bit?
Sure. That's where people always want to start with the fun beer and running stuff. Yep. So I've been writing for this beer magazine, Draft magazine, for almost a decade, a long time writing about beer. And it was probably about 8-9 years ago, my editor came to me and said, we want you to write for our new website. There's this thing called blogs and social media, and we want to fill it up. But what do you want to write about? What do you want to specialize in the beer world that kind of makes it your niche? And so I thought about it a while, and I came back to her. I had this this flash of inspiration. And my thought was, there's a lot of beer drinkers out there. There's a lot of athletes and runners and triathletes and weekend warriors. And there's an intersection of those two, people mm-hmm. who love to go have an active lifestyle and then reward themselves by exploring the craft beer world and getting into beer. And I was like, I don't think there's anyone really talking about those sort of things. So she thought about it. She's like, let me talk to some people here at Draft, and said, after thinking about it, sure, go for it. Let's see how it goes. And that's been, you know, almost a decade now where I've been writing about beer and running. I call the column The Beer Runner, the blog The Beer Runner. And now there's a lot of people who talk about it. I'm not the only one anymore. This thing called the beer mile has become kind of a cultural phenomenon where you drink 4 beers and run a lap and drink a beer every lap.
That sounds terrible.
It is terrible. I don't recommend it to anyone, even though I've done it too many times to count. But yeah, I remember it was on ESPN when the first person broke the 5-minute barrier in the beer mile. It was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. So then I knew it had really broken through to the mainstream. But I was there when it was still underground.
Nice.
So that's how I got into that, the beer and running.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Indeed, I'm sure there's a lot of stories that connect to that in your own personal networking world. As a writer and someone who's teaching and educating others on writing, I imagine you are reading a number of different books. So what are you reading right now?
So in the fall, I teach a seminar at Marquette University, an honor seminar called The Art and Science of Creativity.
Okay.
And I feel like that's a class where I constantly have to keep pushing myself with new concepts and come up with creative ideas if I'm going to be teaching about creativity. So in the summer, I kind of get in this manic phase of reading all the creativity books I can and learning all about creativity and pushing myself. So right now I'm reading a book called The Dance of the Possible.
Okay.
It is I think the subtitle is like a short guide, a reverent guide to creativity. That's by Scott Birkin. And I just started another book along with that called Barking Up the Wrong Tree by Eric Barker. And that also kind of looks at science and research and really digging beyond just, you know, sort of what we intuitively think about creativity and more looking at research and science and what it tells us about how we can be creative.
Very nice. Thanks so much for sharing that. So creativity probably inspires a lot of curiosity. What is it that you're curious about?
So I said I teach this class on creativity. Uh-huh. I also teach an analytics, social media analytics course and a media writing course. This fall, I think, will be my 6th or 7th year teaching. And I'm really curious about teaching methods and learning and what has the greatest impact. And I think back to when I first started teaching and was just sort of figuring it out and, you know, stumbled upon things like project-based learning and websites like Edutopia. And I'm still extremely curious about that to see, you know, what students respond to, what kind of cuts through the clutter, what excites them. I think one thing about college students is they've learned how to look as disinterested as possible
in what you're doing. I can agree with that statement.
You know, because I can't look like I'm too cool, you know, or I'm too nerdy in front of my friends or whatever. So I always try to find that moment that really cuts through the veneer and like what they actually get excited about and curious about. So that's what I'm curious about. And I've been for a long time now, like what is the best method for teaching and learning?
Wow. So you've probably identified a number of different methods, but it sounds like you haven't quite pinpointed what is the best method.
So, I mean, I think I kind of broadly know like what works and what doesn't.
Okay.
I think what doesn't work terribly well as a lecture.
Uh-huh.
And even if it's an entertaining lecture, research shows that you only retain a small percentage of that. I don't even remember what that is, but let's say 20%. But you know, if you're learning by doing,
mm-hmm.
then you internalize it, you know, and also teaching others, like then you internalize it. So, you know, you can broadly know that, but you know, I'm still curious about what that means in practice. You know, if I'm in the classroom, what does that mean to have them involved in a project and the project actually teaches them something, you know, not just gives them something to do or something to keep them occupied. So that's the kind of insatiable curiosity of like, okay, broad idea, I know that a project works, but what does that project actually mean when I get into the classroom?
Yeah. No, that's really interesting because not only in the classroom, but I think in the real world as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just sitting and hearing someone lecture, and we've all, professionals, gone to a number of speaking engagements and listening to someone, and yeah, you do only retain a certain percentage of it, even though the entire message was probably extremely inspiring, but mm-hmm. then you've got like one or two takeaways that stick with you, even though you could have had solid application from everything that was shared.
Yeah.
So yeah, really good.
How do you take it and run with it and apply it for sure?
Yeah, absolutely. So as an adjunct professor at Marquette University, a number of new recent grads have just, you know, stepped forward into this real world. Mm-hmm. what advice are you or would you share with all future new graduates?
So this might seem like counterintuitive advice or maybe not what someone like in my position, I guess, would give. But I tell people, and I tell this literally to every graduating class of seniors, go work in a national park. Go do something that has nothing to do with your job, your major, your education, and just go explore and learn. Learn from other people, learn from people who are not your age. College students have spent their entire life with everyone surrounded by people their own grade level, their own
yep.
age. And that's not how the real world works. You know, you're surrounded by people from different age groups, backgrounds, cultures.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I stumbled upon this when I graduated and applied for jobs. And then I just found I needed a break. I needed a time not to jump into the work world and not to jump into communications and what my major was telling me to do. But just to go do something different and figure it out for myself. So I worked in Montana as a bellboy for the summer.
Fun.
And it was so fun in Glacier National Park. Met one of my best friends, lifelong friends who worked there. He was a college student at the time. I had just graduated. And I started blogging. I just started writing, not because anyone was telling me to, but for the love of it. And I started, you know, just doing things on my own, just writing on my own. And actually rediscovered this passion for writing and communicating that sort of had gotten tamped down and buried a little bit by so many assignments, you know, and so many people who told me that this is what I had to do, or this is, you know, what the homework was, or what I had to do on deadline, maybe in my internships. So just do something for yourself. It doesn't mean you have to backpack Europe. You don't have to have a lot of money. I worked as a bellboy and got paid pretty good money through tips.
Yep.
you know, and my room and board was taken care of. I lived in a bare bones barracks cabin, but who cared, you know?
Yeah.
And I got to hike on the nights and weekends and any spare moment we had, and just sort of found myself like before the next phase of my life. So that's my advice. Parents might think I'm crazy. Students might think I'm crazy. But just go do something fun for yourself.
Yeah, because before you know it, you're doing the 9 to 5 or 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and then
you've got
a house and a mortgage and kids, mm-hmm. and you have no time to do those random, you know, life adventures.
Do it now. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Tim, so some people are scared by the word networking. Mm-hmm. You know, it evokes fear and some sort of uncertainty. I'm hoping to remove some of that fear. So can you share with me your favorite or most successful networking experience that you've had?
So when I think about networking, you know, I think people tend to have an idea in their mind of a mixer, you know, at an event, at a bar, kind of
sure.
controlled and
yep.
contrived. I grew up in a rural area and in the country. My dad's a mechanic. All my relatives are farmers. And, you know, I didn't grow up with the term networking. No one ever told me to network.
Sure.
But what people did was just help their neighbors constantly. And what I think about is, and this may sound silly to people who didn't grow up in the country or on a farm, but every time the cows got out, your neighbors showed up in droves to get the cows back in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds ridiculous, but actually, you know, we're on a country road going 60 miles an hour, a car can hit a cow, could have a disaster, and cows are not cheap. Cows are your livelihood.
Yep.
So people like quickly rallied, ran together, got the cows in, and that extended to, you know, if your tractor broke down, if your car broke down. You know, I was constantly watching my dad help people growing up. So when I think of networking, I think of how you can help people.
Yes.
You know, not like how can you exchange a business card, but in the broad sense, like what do you have to give someone, you know, and then, you know, this kind of bears itself out in the research now. If anyone's read Adam Grant's book or research on givers and takers.
Okay.
And what he found in his research is that givers, people who are willing to do favors for people, they're at the very bottom, but also the very top of society. So if you can show someone that you are willing to help them out, you become CEOs, you become leaders, you become people who are at the top because people want to help you back. The flip side of that is you have to make sure that you're not being taken advantage of, walked on, that sort of thing. But if you can take care of that and make sure that, you know, you're helping people, but you're also smart about it, you'll be rewarded. You'll be, you know, people will give back to you. If you're not the first person, you know, if you're not waiting for someone else to make the first move, but just to jump in and help. So that's what I think of when I think of this buzzword. I think of just helping people.
Wow, there's a lot of really good information you just shared there. One, I think kind of your definition of networking, which is help your neighbors. That's just,
yeah.
I mean, really, that's what it comes down to, right?
Yep.
You know, pay it forward, helping, you know, do unto others as you want done unto yourself.
Yeah, it's the oldest golden rule,
yeah. It's just really straightforward. But I was really intrigued by the givers discussion that you started opening up. As far as that top and the bottom, and I never really considered it that way, in that, yeah, you will be elevated over time, I think, if you continue to help and support others, and that's just kind of that circle of life that it comes back to you, if you are managing those that are taking advantage
yeah.
of you.
I mean, yeah, be that, smart
that,
about it.
That's an interesting part, and that topic really hasn't been addressed, I would say, in the conversations that I've had, is... that, you know, I guess if you surround yourself with the wrong type of people,
yep.
then you will be, your generosity will be taken advantage of.
Yeah. And the thing about givers is they're, what defines them is they're willing to make that first move. They're willing to give without someone first giving to them. The other layer is reciprocators, you know, so you do me a favor, I do, you back a favor.
Sure.
What sets a giver apart is they will first do that favor before being asked. They will go do something for someone. Now you have to, again, be careful is like you do someone a favor if they keep taking from you, that's bad.
Yep.
But if you're willing to give, you know, make that first move, and I've taken that to heart. I'm usually not a good, I don't, like if I'm at an event, I don't go first, you know, introduce myself to everyone.
Sure.
I wait for someone else to do that. You know, this is someone's party, and then they'll make an introduction.
Uh-huh.
And like, that's just kind of normal, I think. But after reading Adam Grant's research, I'm like, there's nothing wrong with going up to someone and saying, like, hey, I don't think we met yet. I'm Tim.
Yep.
And that's in Eric Barker's book too. And I already knew about that, but I was reminded of that when I was reading that over the weekend. And I went to a Memorial Day party, and there's plenty of people there I didn't know. Normally, I would just sit back and wait and be like, okay, well, you know, maybe after a beer or two, people will be introduced. But I just went up to someone. I was like, I don't think we were introduced yet. I'm Tim. And, you know, she smiled and introduced herself, and our kids played together. So it's like, that wasn't a big leap, but you just get in that mindset like, hey, I can give before I'm asked or before like it feels socially appropriate. Just go do it.
Yeah.
Someone needs to start.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. Now, you've got quite an extensive network, and I know this because I have followed you on social media and digital, and you were referred, you know, to be in conversation with me on this topic because of your network, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do to stay in front of and best nurture your network?
So here's just a small trick, but something I like to do, especially in the summer. Doesn't work as well in February. But there's a TED Talk I saw a couple years ago about walking meetings.
Okay.
And I had, this is going to sound kind of self-important, but like when people like contact me, they're like, hey, can you have coffee? You know, are you, do you have time to go grab coffee? And the first couple of times, that's fine. But after like, you know, the sixth in a row or whatever, you're like, I am way over caffeinated. You know, but I don't want to be a jerk. I don't want to turn them down. What's the appropriate thing to do in a situation like this? So to get back to that, the TED Talk about walking meetings, it's a simple concept. Like just and replace some of your meetings where you're sedentary, going to grab coffee, going to grab lunch or whatever, with some walking meetings. And I was like, well, this is great because you know, I work on Marquette University's campus, and in the summer, we have a beautiful campus.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot of people around. Take advantage of it.
Yes.
So I started inviting people to come to campus, meet me in the lobby, and we'll just go take a walk. So I, you know, I find that do what works for you, you know. So to get back to your original question, to get in front of a network, to get in front of other people, what do you like to do?
Yep.
You know, and if it's to go to a mixer in a bar, then maybe that's it. But maybe it's not, you know, maybe you're a cyclist and you want to join a cycling group.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're a runner and you want to join a running group, you know, whatever works for you, make that kind of your networking event.
Sure. So nurturing the relationships then. Meaning, you know, I guess if you're a part of that group where you have that common, you know, if it's cycling or running or whatever, then you're just continuing to show up and be there and have that presence again and again and again. What about in that professional sense? That's not your kind of for fun, you know, I guess more, the professional world.
Yeah, getting down to like, okay, I actually need some like professional thing rather than just kind of getting in front of people. Maybe this is basic. Maybe other people do this too, but I like the surprise LinkedIn recommendation. So, you know, like, I think that's kind of a lost art. You know, I mean, like, same with, you know, thank you cards. People send thank you cards and that sort of thing. But usually, again, they're done when it's almost expected.
Yeah.
I think they're the best and most effective and just, you know, nice to see when they show up out of the blue.
Yep.
So I, you know, I will block off time in my calendar when, you know, time is slow at work, or I have, you know, a spare 30 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever. And I will just go through my LinkedIn connections and be like, who's done something that really deserves recognition, or who could I highlight, or maybe who doesn't have enough LinkedIn recommendations. And I will go just recommend them. And if you look at my LinkedIn profile, you can see how many people, you know, you recommend. I have done a lot. And it's also just fun exercise for me or anyone who does it, is it helps you reflect on what have people given you, you know, and how have you worked with people and what have you learned from people. And selfishly, if you think of it that way, you then also show up on their LinkedIn pages. So if, you know, I'm on your LinkedIn page or other people's, when they're going to search you, they see me. And hopefully, you know, this is good company I want to be in. And I'm leaving these recommendations for them, but also all their network to see, for them and for, you know, for me as well.
Wow, that's really, really powerful. I'm definitely intrigued by the walking meetings. I've not heard of that, and I need to look that up right away after this.
Yeah.
But the surprise LinkedIn recommendation, I think that's a fantastic tip, because it's going back to your help your neighbors statement, right?
Yeah.
And just that self-reflection of, you know, kind of who's been helping me recently, that I can go out and kind of pay it forward and give them a nice little thank you and acknowledgement of the good that they've done.
Yeah.
But then also that it's showing up, you know, that you're showing up on their profile. That's a good way to look at it.
It's a sneaky backdoor way. Yeah. To
it
get
is.
Yourself out
no,
there.
That's nice.
But do it for the right reasons.
Absolutely. without a doubt. But that's really, really good information right there. You started to talk about this a little bit as far as kind of growing your network and by joining other groups. But what advice would you offer the business professional who is looking to grow their network?
Well, so I don't know if this relates too much with, you know, what I was saying about like joining the networking
sure.
group. There actually are, and I think in this town, cycling groups that are mm-hmm. for the sake of business networking as well.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, I would say follow your interests and do, you know, jump in and do what you would like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do teaching, I do advising, I work full time, I write on the side. And I don't do that with the expressed feeling of like, these are all networking events.
Yep.
That is a secondary benefit, but
sure.
I do it because I feel like I have something to offer there. I have, you know, I enjoy it. It's interesting to me. And it can come back to you in interesting and unusual ways. One example is a couple of years ago, I got called from a big company, corporation here in town. They asked if I would come and do a training for them, paid training, paid pretty well. And I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. You know, like what time, what dates do you need me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking an hour or 2 hours. And they're like, can you take a couple of days off for this? And I was like, sure. Why? I was like, well, we're flying our whole global company out to Mexico City or wherever it was, somewhere in Mexico. We'd like you to come down and do like a training for all of our global marketing managers.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, okay, I can do that too. Interesting. and then I said, you know, how did you hear about me or how did you get my name? And they're like, oh, one of our interns is a former student of yours.
Oh, cool.
And she speaks really highly of you. And we were looking for someone who could do social media training. We looked into what you'd done and we thought like you'd be a good candidate for this. And I was like, okay, you know, here is a student who I had as a sophomore and then I guess a senior.
Uh-huh.
You know, I really took those classes seriously, like I mentioned at the beginning.
Yep, yep.
I want to do the best for it. And it turns out, you know, now she works her full time, but as an intern, she had dropped my name and it turned into this consulting opportunity in Mexico.
Wow.
You know, so it was a very unexpected. But that goes back to your question of like, you know, pick your interests, you know,
yes.
pick what you want to do, pick
yep.
where you can make a contribution, and then let it come back to you.
Yeah.
Don't expect the return immediate, but you know, a couple of years down the line, someone you mentored as an intern, might do something that benefits you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with the finding things that are of interest to you, but more importantly, that you can't have expectations of getting some sort of return immediately.
I mean,
you have to put the time in, you know, as far as, helping your neighbors, you know,
yeah.
and adding value and being an advocate for others before you start to see anything. And if that's even what your goal is, I mean, if it's just to be a good human being, then
yeah.
that's okay. Then you know,
not a bad goal itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so this one, I am very, very interested in your answer because you're heavy in the social space, obviously, as mm-hmm. a director of social media, but you've talked a lot here about that traditional face-to-face engagement. So which one do you find more value in, digital networking or traditional networking?
So I don't know if this answer is cheating, but I don't think it's either or.
Okay.
You know, I think in today's day and age, it has to be both.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think they're for different purposes. I think with digital, you can now have larger reach and meet more people like we did this way.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you really want to make an impact, if you really want impact on yourself as well as other people, it has to be face-to-face and in person. So I don't think it's either or. I think it has to be both. But you can think about it, you know, as a band that's making music in 2017, you know, if I'm a band and I want to get in front of as many people, build a brand, build an audience, I have to be on Spotify. I have to be on iTunes, yep. You know, I have to be out there digitally accessible. But if I really want to give someone a memorable experience, I'm going to put on a concert.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to go to a festival. And if I'm a fan, I'm not just going to listen to it on Spotify. If I really, really dig this band, I'm going to go to a concert. You know, but I can't go to every band's concerts, you know. But I can listen to a lot of people on Spotify. So, you know, it's both. And I've kind of grown up with both. I'm of the... they call it the Oregon Trail generation.
Yep, I was just going to say that. I knew you were going right there. So, that's where I live, too.
So, you know, it's like...
it's a special place, actually.
I feel like we're kind of on the cusp. So you can kind of see both sides and see, like, how digital really matters, but so is the face-to-face. So as long as we don't lose one or the other, as long as you recognize the value of both and use it appropriately. Mm-hmm. Use it for what you're hoping to get out of it.
Yeah. I love the band analogy. I think that's a really good way to illustrate in a fun space the value and importance of both digital and traditional, because everyone can connect with music for the most
part. Both. You know, we like to go to concerts and we like to listen to our playlist in the car. So
absolutely.
They both have their place.
Yeah, great analogy. All right, here's a fun question. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Man. So, you know, I kind of came of age when blogging had first started. But prior to that, I was really deep into internships and working at the student newspaper and working in student media and doing, you know, what's quote unquote right, you know, the right path, like what I should be doing. And I'm glad I did that, you know, of course, but if I could go back and tell, you know, 20, 21 year old Tim, I would say chill out just a little bit. You don't need to work that many hours. You don't have to do, you know, you don't have to try to pad your resume so much because, you know, first of all, you just don't have to. That's not the only way to live life. But it's a little bit counterproductive as well. You know, I worked almost full-time my senior year at the Associated Press, in addition to, you know, a full workload, freelancing, that sort of thing. And I got burned out. You know, that was one of the reasons why I went to Montana.
Sure.
I was like, okay, I need something different in my life. I need to take a break. I'm glad I did do that.
Yep.
But I'm not sure if I would have had to do that if I hadn't been so intense. And I see that, you know, in others, in seniors and college students who are like, I have to find that perfect job out of college. I have to start paying off my student loans.
Yep.
I have to, you know, prove to my mom and dad this, you know, was the right decision.
Sure. Yep.
You know, all those sort of things. And that's very, you know, it's part of being young. But, you know, if with the wisdom of age, if I could go back and tell myself, is to try a few different other things. I took a documentary film class just for fun my senior year, and thinking I'd never use it again because I was a print journalist and that's what I was going to do with my life. And then the whole world became digital media. And digital production and video.
Yeah.
So I learned that those sort of like excursions, those fun things, those hobbies, they can pay off. I mean, even if they don't pay off, that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what I tell myself.
Wow, that's good. So just chill out a little bit.
It'll be okay. It only comes with age, I think, sometimes, though.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with, and do you think you can do it within the sixth degree?
So I remember thinking about this question, and I probably have a very unoriginal answer, but I really would enjoy it. Or like to do it. I'd like to meet Barack Obama.
Okay.
And have dinner with him, have coffee with him, have a beer with him, whatever. He seems like he's in a good place right now.
Yes.
Post-presidency. And he has the, you know, the, I guess, luxury of being a young retiree who's been through a lot, who's done a lot. I read his book twice, one of his books. And he seems like someone, you know, and I don't know him, but he seems like someone who has his head on his shoulders and has had a really unique experience. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to meet him again, probably not original. how would I do it? That I'm not sure yet. I got some work to do, but I think I got some time. So I'll have to put that on my list of things, my bucket list.
Yeah, I'd say you probably do have some time. And I bet you, if you did some digging into your network, I'm pretty sure you'd be able to find a path, an opportunity.
So his former speechwriter, one of his former speechwriters, he graduated from Holy Cross, and he now has a podcast. He's Jesuit educated, and I at Marquette University, you know, work with people in the kind of Jesuit education, higher education world.
Uh-huh.
That's my lifeline. I thought a little bit, it's like, okay, well, this speechwriter has talked about, you know, being Jesuit educated and what that meant for working for a president and working in politics. So I'm thinking maybe someday when I have a little more time, I'll explore that a little deeper.
Yeah, sounds like you've got this thought out a little bit already,
we'll see.
A good starting point for
yeah.
sure. All right. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting their network?
Listen to this podcast. I just subscribed to it.
Nice.
But don't forget the face-to-face. I mean, that's honestly yeah. like when, you know, I had mentioned this before we started recording, is that I was very impressed with how you set this up and how you had an intake form and all the directions and that sort of thing. And one of your questions was, do you want to do this over the phone or face-to-face?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to do it face-to-face for the reasons that we talked about.
Absolutely.
And see what you have here and meet you and,
yeah.
you know, and look at this place. So, so I guess, you know, subscribe to this podcast and see this podcast studio and go out and meet people and do things face-to-face. Good things will happen.
Absolutely. I agree. Face-to-face. Get out and meet people. And and this podcast is all about networking. So hopefully if you're listening, you're already a subscriber.
Yeah.
So Tim, if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way that they can reach you?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Sigelski, but it's probably easier to follow at the Beer Runner. Easier to spell, probably more fun stuff there. I'm on LinkedIn. If you look up Tim Sigelski on LinkedIn, Facebook, all of those sort of things. Snapchat is my latest thing.
Okay.
Trying to learn what the kids are doing,
yep.
what's cool. Working on this summer, a focus group and study on Snapchat.
Oh, cool.
Knock on wood, I hope I'm not jinxing it, but I'm working on a thesis about Snapchat, so you can find me on Snapchat as well.
Okay, and we will include all that information in the show notes. Tim, thanks so much for being on the show.
Happy to be here.
This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Tim Sigelski for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.